Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Jessen, Judge Johnson, Judge Larkin, the Honorable Lucinda Jessen presiding. The matter before the court is A20-0283, James Edward Bono versus Megan Yvonne
Good morning, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is September 16, 2020, and this is the second of two oral arguments we have this morning via zoom.gov. Well, while the setting may be a little different remotely, the basic same rules apply as if you were in our physical courtroom. Each of you will have 15 minutes for argument, and counsel for appellant, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. I would ask you to introduce yourself and put your name on the record at the beginning of your arguments because we do keep oral recordings of these available for the public. And as you will notice, our marshal has a clock up here, which will have your time, so it's easy to keep track of how much time you have. And with that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Victoria Taylor, and I am here on behalf of appellant James Edward Bono. The issue before the court primarily is parenting time that was denied by the district court for my client. My client, the appellant, and the respondent were never married. Back in 2016, when the child was an infant, my client filed a petition to establish custody, parenting time, child support, and paternity. After several months, the parties put an agreement on the record that became the order of the court reserving the issue of parenting time. Last year, last July, I believe, or April, I'm not sure when we filed the motion, my client brought a motion to establish parenting time. Specifically, the motion was asking to modify the prior order to commence parenting time. The central issue that seems to be in this case is whether my client's request was a modification of parenting time or whether it was the establishment of parenting time. We contend it, in fact, was an establishment of parenting time. And as an establishment of parenting time, the district court erred in not granting an evidentiary hearing, not applying all of the best interest factors of the child as afforded in 518.17, and all of the other factors required for the court to determine parenting time in the best interest of the child in subdivision 1B, the clauses 1 through 9.
Counsel, Judge Larkin, I have a quick question. What authority do you cite to support the proposition that in the instance of a determination, an initial determination of parenting time, the judge must hold an evidentiary hearing?
I would direct the court right to the statute, and that would be 518.17. And it's right in subdivision 1. In evaluating the best interests of the child for the purposes of determining issues of custody and parenting time, the court must consider and evaluate all relevant factors, including, and then it goes through all of the 12 factors. Subdivision 1B, clauses 1 through 9 specifically, B1 says the court must make detailed findings on each of the factors in paragraph A.
But does the statute say the judge must hold an evidentiary hearing to do this?
Well, we would argue that in order to do detailed findings, and by the way, this particular order of the district court has no findings whatsoever on the best interest.
But I'd like to stay on the first point, which is your assertion that we should reverse because your client didn't get an evidentiary hearing. And the reason I'm questioning that is because I'm not aware that the statutes or case law mandates an evidentiary hearing for an initial determination of parenting time. And instead, the rules of general practice regarding proceedings in family court say that a judge may decide such issues on paper based on affidavits, and that if a person wants an evidentiary hearing, the person needs to request one in the motion papers. Did your client request an evidentiary hearing in his motion papers?
My client did request an evidentiary hearing in his motion to amend findings.
All right. Did he request an evidentiary hearing in his motion papers? In other words, what you're saying is he got to the hearing. There wasn't an evidentiary hearing. Did he object at that time to the lack of an evidentiary hearing?
No. And here's
why. So it wasn't until after he had failed to request an evidentiary hearing. He did not object to the lack of an evidentiary hearing once he got his hearing. It was only then that he complained about lack of an evidentiary hearing.
At the initial motion, so generally how this goes in family court is we have a hearing, and at that point we would have the district court judge, we would have a conversation about the evidentiary hearing. That is not how this hearing went. We argued our motions, the judge took it under advisement and issued an order later on. It was in that point when the judge did not even address an evidentiary hearing is when we brought it up for our motion as an issue in our motion for amended findings. Generally.
Counsel, when you were at that, were you the attorney who was at that hearing?
I was.
Okay. Did you say to the judge, we want an evidentiary hearing. We don't want this decided on the submissions. We want to schedule an evidentiary hearing.
I don't particularly know I said those words in the transcript, no.
What did you do to communicate to the judge that you didn't want him to make the decision based on submissions? You wanted live testimony.
I believe I did bring up the fact that her responsive pleadings had a lot of factors that had nothing to do with the best interest of the child. They actually didn't even mention the child, and that the court needed to make further evidence or find further evidence to support any sort of parenting time.
Well, that sounds like an argument on the merits based on the submissions that were provided.
Like I said, I don't know. I didn't memorize the transcript, and it's been a while since I wrote the brief. So I cannot point to a place in the transcript, nor can I recall if I specifically, I do know I was expecting one, because that's just the general course of how these things go.
Counsel, can I ask this along the same lines? The motion was a motion to, how did you style it? A motion to amend the parenting time order?
To amend the prior order to commence parenting time because the issue had been reserved. So here was my logical thinking on the issue. Your question. The reservation of parenting time naturally flowed out of my client's original petition that established parenting time, custody, paternity, child support. The issue was reserved. The issue was reserved from the petition. My understanding is that when an issue is reserved on an initial petition, it is reserved for evidentiary hearing going forward. That is my understanding.
Counsel, can we talk about what authorities might support your understanding? Can you cite case law that indicates that when there is a reservation of parenting time, a subsequent determination is treated as an initial determination?
Yes, I did not find any particular case law on the issue of parenting time.
Right. I'm aware there are other cases having to do with child support and maintenance, right. But so you're not aware of any in this area.
That is correct. And so
can you tell me whether you considered how the parenting time statute might answer this question, if at all?
As far as
how we treat a hearing to determine parenting time after there's been a reservation of parenting time.
I believe that subdivision one,
right?
Okay, subdivision 1B, and I think is that where your question?
I'm looking at 518.175, subdivision 1A, which talks about the court's ability to reserve a determination as to the future establishment or expansion of parenting time. In which case the best interest standard set forth in subdivision 5A shall be applied to a subsequent motion to establish or expand parenting time.
I can certainly highlight, and I know that that is respondent's argument, so I would like to highlight. If we go to 5A, that really is about child support, and that is about the determination of overnights or overnight equivalents for the purposes of child support.
What about 5B?
Subdivision 1B?
No, 5B.
That again is the court, it's a modification. That's not an establishment. If a court is going to modify decision-making provisions of a parenting plan, which that is not the case here, or an order granting or denying parenting time. There was not an order granting or denying parenting time. There was an order reserving the issue of parenting time.
Hmm. All right, well, here's the thing, and this is to the extent you can respond. In preparing the case, a law clerk for the court has determined that previously, we're in subdivision 5 here.
Okay.
Paragraph A was added to subdivision 5 in, I think, about 2014. Prior to that, paragraph B was paragraph A. So there was a point in time when the reference in subdivision 1 to if you're going to reserve parenting time and later come back and talk about establishing it, you looked to 5A. At that time, 5A was actually what we see in paragraph 5B, which talked about the standards for modification. So at least at that point in time, what the legislature had said was, if you reserve parenting time and then are going to have a hearing at which you talk about establishing it for the first time, you look to the standard that you use for a modification. So I'm wondering if we have here a situation where we just have a subsequent amendment and the reference in subdivision 1 perhaps should have been changed to subdivision 5B, which would have made it consistent with what the law had been. Because I agree with you, the reference to subdivision 5A doesn't make any sense because it doesn't have anything to do with parenting time other than calculation of overnight.
And I don't know, I mean, I don't know that I can speak to the legislative changes for the purposes of this hearing. I think that's way outside of my scope and responsibility to do that for the purposes of this hearing. But as I read it, and I think you have to read this very carefully because I think it matters whether it's an establishment of parenting time or a modification of parenting time.
Can you tell me why it matters? What's the difference?
The difference is if there was an order saying, okay, my client shouldn't have parenting time because of X, Y, and Z, and it's not in the best interest of the child, right? And that's what it would be have been in a prior order. There would have been findings. There would have been some sort of facts about the central best interest of this child and this parent for the court to have information on any change. A modification is essentially arguing to the court that there's been a change since the prior order. In a reservation, there is no change. It's simply reserved. It is in limbo. It is still pending on the original petition. On the original petition, my client would have, had it not been reserved, right, there would have been a trial, an evidentiary hearing. And at that trial, the court would have been required to make detailed best interest findings on a parenting schedule that is in the best interest of this child. This child has never gotten that.
If I may, why do we have to look further than your, I think it was July 2019 motion, where your client sought an order finding this in the best interest of the child to modify, and I believe you said, use the word modify, the prior order of this court and stipulation of the parties. Why wouldn't we just look at that and say, well, this is about modification, not about establishment?
Thank you. And that's, again, modifying the prior order and the stipulation of the court. It's a reference to the prior order, but the issue of the motion is parenting time, which was reserved. After the motion says modify the prior order, meaning commencing parenting time. And I would say to the court that commencing and establishing are synonyms. And that's exactly what it was, with a reservation of the issue. Okay. And I'm out of time, I'm sorry.
We'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Susan Dodelin, and I am here today representing the respondent, Megan Hedberg. Ms. Hedberg asks that you affirm the district court's order in all respects. The district court properly assigned the burden of proof for this parenting time modification motion on the moving party, Mr. Bono. The court was not required to hold an evidentiary hearing, which Mr. Bono never requested until after his motion was denied. The court made findings on all relevant best interest factors, and its findings are supported by the evidence in the record. Now,
Ms. Dodelin,
well, yes,
why do you refer to this as a modification rather than establishment? And is it based on the law or based on the record of this case?
Both, Your Honor. First of all, Mr. Bono's motion filed in July of 2019 requested, quote, an order finding that it is in the best interest of the child pursuant to the statutes 518.17 and 518.175 subdivision 1 to modify the prior order of this court and stipulation of the parties to commence parenting time, and requesting a regular fairly extensive schedule with the child. So that's what Mr. Bono requested. That is what the record reflects he asked for, to modify the prior order. The statute, as Judge Larkin went through with counsel, also directs the district court to apply a modification standard when parenting time is first reserved and then a party comes back and asks that parenting time then be established.
Okay, so then, I guess my question wasn't so much the standard, but how it's characterized or what label we use, and whether, and I guess that begs the question whether the label is determinative, but you referred to it as a modification, but maybe you would agree with me that 0.175 subdivision 1A talks about if there is a reservation, then there could be a future establishment.
Certainly, yes, but
it doesn't use the word modification in that sentence.
No, it uses the word establish if a
0.175.
The court may reserve a determination as to the future establishment of a parent's parenting time. In that event, the future establishment of parenting time, the best interest standard set forth in subdivision 5, paragraph A, shall be applied. And that previously paragraph 5A is now paragraph 5B, which is entitled, now falls under modification of parenting plan or order for parenting time. So
a question I had, and I was going to ask Ms. Taylor, and I neglected to do so. But I guess I'm wondering whether the label or the word used is determinative of the standard. I mean, is it necessarily so that if we characterize it as establishment, there's one standard, if we characterize it as modification, it's something else? Or is it possible that even if it's deemed to be an establishment, that we still apply a standard that resembles the typical modification standard?
Well, that certainly would not be what the statute seems to indicate. And the case law detailing what requirements have to be met when a court modifies a parenting time scheduled are entirely, you know, that fall under that section of the statute are different than the case law that talks about how a court proceeds when originally establishing custody and parenting time in the first instance.
And counsel, maybe I think I might have understood Judge Johnson's question, but I'm looking at the statute again, 518.175, the last line. In that event, talking about in the event of a reservation as to the future establishment or expansion of parenting time, the best interests set forth in subdivision 5A shall be applied to a subsequent motion to establish or expand parenting time. Without even getting to what's in 5A, doesn't that line tell us that the legislature intended that whether you are establishing parenting time after a reservation or expanding it, the same standard should apply?
I don't think so. I think that if it was anticipated that the same standard apply, they wouldn't have directed the court to subdivision 5A at all. They would have directed the court back to the best interest standard set forth in 518.17.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm looking at it this way. Is it possible what the legislature was thinking was, well, if the parties go to court and they go through the trouble of establishing parenting time, but there's going to be, or parentage, but there's going to be a reservation of parenting time, we're not going to then treat a return to court to seek to establish parenting time as an initial determination. In other words, we're not going to treat it the same we would have if at the time of the parented action, people would have asked the court to decide it. I mean, what I'm suggesting is, does this language tell us that once you do a reservation of parenting time, a subsequent motion to establish parenting time is going to be treated the same as a request to expand a prior order? In other words, do you just have one shot to do sort of a full-blown analysis, all best interest factors apply, and you need to do that at the front end? If you don't, and if you reserve it, you kind of go into a different territory where there's one standard that applies to both establishment of a parenting time schedule and modification of an existing order.
That was a lot of question. I'm sorry.
It was. I'm just trying to make sure you understand my thinking.
I think I do. My response to that, I think, deals with less about whether, well, one issue is whether there's as it's been characterized as a full-blown analysis of all of the best interest factors. I think the first thing that needs to happen is who has the burden of proof. This direction to the modification statute, to me, simply says, okay, well, if somebody comes back and wants to modify the prior order that simply reserves parenting time, and to modify an order reserving parenting time, I think necessarily is a motion to establish, because if it hasn't already been established, it needs to be established. Regardless, the person who's coming into court to do that is the person who now bears a burden of proof of showing that establishing, you know, that the parenting time they want established is in the child's best interests. So you can, however you look at the best interests analysis of that motion, directing the court to consider it as a motion to modify the prior order establishes who has the burden of proof. And so when Mr. Bono came to court and said he wanted to modify the prior order and establish parenting time, it was up to him to bring forth enough evidence to show that establishing parenting time between him and this child now was in that child's best interest. And I would submit that his 6-page affidavit, where he doesn't even mention her best interests other than to say that he thinks it's in her best interest to have this massive parenting time schedule, he doesn't address any best interest factors. He doesn't address how his psychological, his brain injury, he doesn't address any of the medical issues. As the district court noted, his affidavit is simply conclusory and says that he's had some problems with a traumatic brain injury in the past. He's been in rehabilitation and this should not negatively affect his parenting. He says he lives in his own home and lives with a girlfriend he's been with for more than a year. And then he says he wants a parenting time that goes from 0 to 50% in about 2 years. And says, I believe this is in the child's best interests. So with that as Mr. Bono's submission, he submits nothing from a doctor, nothing from a therapist, nothing from the current girlfriend he's living with. That's all the district court has to go on in determining whether Mr. Bono has met any burden of proof or even just a threshold of establishing that maybe this is in the child's best interests. So I think I've strayed from your question a bit, but I think the main point of directing the district court to the modification statute certainly initially establishes what the burden of proof is here. Is it simply let's start over, or let's pretend this wasn't reserved and that 2 more years hasn't gone by since the initial reservation? Or should we have a party who wants to now have parenting time have the burden of showing why it's in the child's best interest? And that's what this district court examined, and that's what the district court found that Mr. Bono did not meet. Ms. Hedberg, in response to that, filed a very extensive affidavit with a lot of documentary evidence to, as the district court stated, provide context to Mr. Bono's assertion that, yes, I had a TBI in 2011, and I've had some problems in the past, but everything's fine now, and that should not negatively impact my parenting. Ms. Hedberg provided documentation from the Social Security Administration outlining very concerning information about why he was deemed disabled in the first place in 2015. She provided evidence of Mr. Bono's domestic abuse history involving 3 or 4 different victims between 2009 and 2017, including herself and the girlfriend immediately following her, Caitlin Steckman. And the court considered that information to provide context for Mr. Bono's claim that he doesn't have anything concerning about parenting time at all. Even though she filed that 11 days ahead of the hearing, and Mr. Bono had, there's a 5-day deadline to file any responsive submissions a party wants the court to consider, Mr. Bono filed nothing. He didn't file anything. He didn't file an affidavit denying what she was alleging in her affidavit. He didn't file his own therapist information to provide more evidence about what his current treatment plan is, his prescriptions, how he's doing, what is the doctor who testified at the OFP, his own doctor testified at the 2016 OFP hearing about the problems he had been having. Nothing from that doctor to say he's better now. Mr. Bono comes to this court now and says, well, none of that's relevant and none of that concerns the child. But he didn't provide anything to the court, to the district court, to explain, to demonstrate, to prove that things are great in his house and he would be a great person to parent this child. He could have asked for an extension of time. There was a lot in Ms. Hedberg's affidavit that could have taken a significant amount of time to respond to, had he, since he didn't choose to address all of that head on in his own submission, he could have asked for more time to submit further information. He could have responded by requesting an evidentiary hearing. He could have asked the court to appoint a parenting time evaluator to investigate all of these allegations and to provide recommendations about what the best interests of the child are. Mr. Bono did none of that, and he rested on his 6-page affidavit where he didn't say anything at all except, I want parenting time and I think it's in her best interests. So Judge Schaufelman, who has seen these parties on multiple occasions, Judge Schaufelman did the OFP trial in 2016 and found that Mr. Bono had committed domestic abuse against Ms. Hedberg.
Counsel, could I ask a question before your time is up? Do you agree that if there had not been, if there is not a reservation of parenting time, it truly is the first time the issue is coming before the district court, the district court is then obligated to consider each one of the statutory best interest factors?
Yes, I believe that to be the case, yes.
But if the district court has issued an order on parenting time, and the case is coming back before the court for a subsequent order, the district court need not consider each of the statutory best interest factors. It only needs to consider factors that are relevant.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes, that is the case.
So one of the main differences here between treating what was before the court in this proceeding as an initial, quote unquote, initial determination of parenting time or a modification of parenting time is whether or not the district court had to apply each of the statutory best interest factors.
That's implicated, yes, Your Honor.
All right. And then the other potential difference is, can you tell me, based on your practice and experience, if it is truly the first time a district court is passing upon the parenting time issue, does either party have a burden of proof, or does the district court simply make the decision based on the best interest of the child and a preponderance of the evidence? In other words, if it's a paternity case and dad says, yes, I want parenting, and now the judge has to decide whether or not he gets parenting, does dad have to prove he should have parenting, or is that you're nodding your head no?
No, Your Honor. In an initial parenting, initial establishment of parenting time, when it's never come before the court before, it is generally accepted that it's the burden of both parties to present what they believe the child's interests are, and the court will make finding what it believes the best interest.
And one more question to wrap this up with the permission of the presiding judge.
Go ahead.
So then in this case, whether we view the underlying hearing before the judge as an initial establishment of parenting time or as some sort of modification of a prior order regarding parenting time impacts father, in that if we determine it's a modification, he has a burden of proof he otherwise wouldn't have, and the district court was required to consider each of the statutory best interest factors, which otherwise it would not have to have done.
I think you've got that's just
I've got it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I would just like to circle back on the basis for my client's motion. He rested firmly on, obviously he had not seen this child for 2 years. So he didn't have specific information, but he did base his motion on the statutory relationship. Our statutes value the relationship between parent and child. And specifically, I'm looking at 518.17, and that would be subdivision 1, and that's going to be. clauses 1 through 9 that govern the application of the best interests of the child. And I'm looking at 2. The court shall consider that it is in the best interest of the child to promote a child's healthy growth and development, right? Through safe, stable, nurturing relationship with a child and both parents. I'm gonna go on.
Okay, counsel, 3. Before you go on, I wanna circle back to the line of questioning we ended with opposing counsel, because I think this court needs to decide what our standard is, what this hearing was, and how it was to have been conducted, because that is the crux of your argument, that you were denied an evidentiary hearing, the district court didn't consider all the best interest factors. Now, do you agree with my understanding of the case law as I reviewed it with Ms. Dodlin? That is, if it truly is the first time parenting time is coming before a court, neither party has a burden of proof. Each party does what it can to establish what's in the best interest of the children, and the district court has to consider all of the best interest factors. But if it's a modification of a prior order, the moving party has the burden of proof, and the district court need not consider all the best interest factors, but instead consider only those that are relevant.
I believe you have it, and that's my understanding.
So then here is my question for you, because your position, as I understand it, is that what happened in this case was not an initial determination of parenting time at which neither party had a burden of proof, or your position is it was an initial determination at which neither party had a burden of proof and all the statutory best interest factors were at play. But I wanna tell you how I ask you to tell the court how we reconcile that position with the statutory language in 518.175 sub 1, which says that when there has been a reservation of parenting time and there is a subsequent proceeding to establish parenting time, the best interest standard set forth in subdivision 5, parent A, shall be applied to a motion to either establish or expand parenting time. And I'm reading that to say that once there's been a reservation, you're kind of out of the world of initial determination. And the legislature intended that when there's been a reservation and there's a subsequent motion to establish parenting time for the first time, the same best interest standard is going to apply, even though there isn't a prior previous or a prior parenting time schedule.
Okay, so
I mean, it says subdivision 5, parent A shall be applied to a subsequent motion to establish or expand.
Correct.
Doesn't the plain language say it doesn't matter whether we're setting the parenting time schedule for the first time or modifying an existing parenting time schedule, we're going to apply the same best interest standard. To agree that the full-fledged, you must consider all factors, does not apply to a change in an existing parenting time schedule.
I think we have to go and read, take that language and read it with 5A. That is a child support heavy.
I don't want to go to 5A. What I'm asking you is, doesn't the last line of 518.175 subdivision 1A tell us that regardless of whether you're establishing a parenting schedule for the first time or modifying an existing parenting time schedule, if there's been a reservation of parenting time, you apply the same standard. And that is the standard that would apply to a modification of an existing parenting time schedule.
That is not how I read it at all.
Okay. Could you tell us what your alternative reading is so we can consider it in our analysis?
Okay. I think you have to read the two sentences together, right? The court, when issuing a parenting time order, may reserve a determination as to the future establishment or expansion of a parent's parenting time, okay? In that event, so that's why you have to read it together, because it refers back to the prior sentence.
Agree.
The best interest standard set forth in subdivision 5, paragraph A, shall be applied to a subsequent motion to establish or expand parenting time, okay? So So there we are. So we go, then we have to go to 5A. I think you're exactly right. And 5A, and this is a recent change in our statute. If a parenting plan or an order granting parenting time cannot be used to determine the number of overnights, this is talking about child support. This is part of the child support calculation. That is what the change was in our statute. In this subdivision, it was about child support because the number of overnights or overnight equivalents is a key factor.
Well, counsel, if we're going to apply A and the legislature has told us whether it's a motion to establish parenting time or to expand parenting time, you apply subdivision 5A. Isn't that the point I'm making? You apply the same standard regardless of whether you're asking to establish a parenting time order for the first time or modify a parenting time order that's existing in the circumstance of a reservation of parenting time.
Correct, Your Honor, but respectfully, it's that 5A refers back to a child support statute. Specifically 518A36 subdivision 1. It is strictly a child support clause.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, 5A simply says for the purposes of this section, overnight equivalence has the meaning given in 518A36. And I mean, the 5A is talking about how you determine the number of overnights in a parenting plan. And it simply references the child support statute to tell you how to define overnight equivalence.
Correct. Because, and I'll just be frank with the court, that there's dollars attached to that in child support. And that is overnights and overnights equivalents are what parties argue in child support orders all the time. And that is a child support part of the statute.
Are there further questions for Ms. Taylor from the panel? Okay. Well, with that, we thank both of you for your helpful arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement and an opinion will be issued within 90 days. And with that, it's the end of our oral arguments. The court is in recess.
Thank you.